All right, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Sunday, August 21st. And it's been a beautiful sunny day here today in New Hampshire and all weekend. And as many of you know, we've had some visitors for the last several days. We had Kathleen's stepsister here, and she purchased a puppy from the same breeder that Chance was bred from. In fact, from the same father as Chance. His father's name is Trout, so we refer to Chance as Son of Trout. And his half-brother is Oliver. And you've seen pictures and I think a video clip in Band of the dogs, of the puppy playing with Chance and having a great time. And so we had a great family visit here over the weekend, and everybody has returned to their respective homes as of this evening. But Chance is a little depressed. His brother isn't here to play. All right, so anyway, puppies are happy. There's some great pictures in Band. And Chance is recovering from the fact that he has gone through all day today, separation anxiety, now that his half-brother has left and he doesn't have that built-in entertainment. But he does have two rabbits that are matching coloration. So it's funny to me, the rabbits, just, it's God's providence. They were available just down the street from us and turned out to be identical in the colors and markings as Chance. So I just refer to the rabbits as his brothers now. And he does have fun playing with them. So let's move on. Tonight we are talking about the cunning of Satan. We're going to read from Genesis 3, verse 1, very briefly tonight. Now the serpent was more crafty than any beast in the field that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, "Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden?" was the question. So there are different translations with the word cunning. There's crafty and shrewdest and subtle. In the New King James Version, it's cunning. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field, which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" I think this is emblematic. It is indicative of the counterfeiting, of the turning around from God's original words, God's original plan, God's original intent. In the word, in the truth, in his plans, in his creations, and Satan turns it 180 degrees, creates a counterfeit, creates a mirror image. He uses God's own words against mankind, including Eve. And he's been doing that since the Garden of Eden. Using God's own words, design, plan, intentions. I mean, look at how Satan tempted even Jesus Christ when he was here incarnate in human form. So we see that happening today. We have gone over this extensively, and I don't want to be terribly repetitive. But it is quite obvious that Satan has no plan of his own, no ability to create life on his own. He can only counterfeit what God has already created. And yet through man, who has been deceived, he continues to convince humans with his lies, with his cunning, with his deception, that somehow he is the one that is telling the truth. that somehow God has been withholding the truth, that God is not telling man the whole story. Well, what Satan is providing, not only the 180, the turning around and in a cunning fashion using God's own words to convince humanity, but is also using forbidden knowledge against humanity, and yet disguising in a very cunning way forbidden knowledge as scientific discoveries, benevolent discoveries, therapeutics. And this is why we focus on science so much, because it's integrated with the spiritual. It begins with the spiritual. Its information comes from the spiritual world. The forbidden knowledge is coming from Satan. And yet, when we look at that forbidden knowledge in the form of different avenues in science, and I'm not denigrating all of science. I hope especially new people that are joining with us don't think that I don't have the ability to see the benevolent outcomes in science for humanity. Certainly I can. But so much of it has been perverted, so much of it has been turned around and applied in a weaponized fashion, that we begin to look at the majority of science through the lenses of suspicion. We look very suspiciously at any new announcement that comes out in science. And so we apply here what we've referred to over the years as the patch 180. Satan turns the original 180 degrees. We turn it another 180 degrees to return it back to its original position, to its original design, its original plan, its original intent by God Himself. This is why we begin with Scripture and we apply it to the scientific topic of the evening. And tonight, what I would like to talk about and present a video continues the discussion of COVID-19. In August of 2021, we published an issue of Entangled Magazine that I'd like to highlight just for a moment. Let me look at the cover of this real quickly so you can find it. This is Entangled Magazine, August of 2021, and on the cover it has the silver spheres that are connected to one another. So you'll see that in evidence real quickly. This was a very long magazine. It was 127 pages long. It focused on snake venom as it relates to COVID-19 and to the vaccines for COVID-19. One of the articles, and these are peer-reviewed scientific papers that we present in the pages of Entangled Magazine. One of these that I'd like to highlight for you, I'm going to give you the title as soon as I scroll down, has to do with snake venom, neurotoxins, and their effects. Again, I like to focus on the date. It was published August 1st, the magazine, August 1st of 2021. The paper in the video that I'm going to share with you tonight, the paper itself, the article from Arizona State University was published August 24th, so 23 days after the publication of Entangled Magazine. They published an article, and I'm going to cite the paper that the article is summarizing in just a moment. But their article from August 24th is entitled, "Like Venom Coursing Through the Body, Researchers Identify Mechanism Driving COVID-19 Mortality. researchers have identified what may be the key molecular mechanism responsible for COVID-19 mortality, an enzyme related to neurotoxins found in rattlesnake venom. So we broke all this. Remember, back in July, we spent the entire month of July in the live streams talking about snake venom. We talked about the microneedle array patch, that its design, its needles, including the hypodermic needle itself, all took their cues from the pit viper fangs, which are hollow, just like a hypodermic needle is hollow and delivers its drug cargo, as does a snake with its venom. So all of July we talked about snake venom and COVID-19, the virus and the disease and the vaccines. And then Arizona State comes out with their paper and their article published through the university talking about exactly what we were talking about with respect to snake venom and not only the virus, but the vaccines themselves. Now, what I'm going to share with you tonight is focused upon the virus, but remember, let me again set the stage. When you're talking about the virus and you develop a vaccine against the virus, you must use the same components in the vaccine as are found in the virus. Otherwise, it cannot be defined as a vaccine. So the virus, its messenger RNA sequence, and all of the components that are in that sequence is what we want to highlight, what we want to preface before we dive into this tonight. So just to recap, remember, this is a single strand of RNA that makes up the virus. In that strand, obviously, are multiple components. This is a sequence of genes. This is a sequence of nucleotides, base pair nucleotides, that form into genes that then express proteins. Now, at the risk of being very redundant, most all of you will remember that there are also fragments, genomic fragments of HIV-1 included in that sequence of the virus. What we are discovering are more genetic materials in that sequence. So picture it this way. You have a sequence as a virus and you pick that up and you now deliver it into a human body and call it a vaccine. So what is in the virus is in the vaccine. Tonight I'm sharing with you information related to snake venom. It's cited specifically that is found in the virus that is causing people to die from the virus. What is found in the virus is found in the vaccines. Otherwise, it does not qualify as a vaccine. Okay? There must be components of the virus. In most cases, it's the entire virus, its entire sequence, that is being utilized as a vaccine. Even in what we've been talking about most recently, not just the messenger RNA, but now the subunit proteins, the whole discussion and what we published this month in Entangled Magazine related to the University of Queensland and their development of a subunit protein vaccine. Look at Novavax and their subunit protein vaccine. What we are going to share with you after tonight that we're doing a deep dive into, and you can see in the background on the table still all the papers we have laid out for the September issue, We are going on Tuesday and Thursday going to do a very deep dive into the adjuvant that is used by Novavax. We're focused on the adjuvant. And again, to define an adjuvant is applied, in the case of Novavax or University of Queensland, is a adjuvant is included in the vaccine with the subunit protein. The purpose is to increase the immunogenicity of the vaccine. In other words, the ability to trigger the innate immune system to produce antibodies specific to that virus. An adjuvant is a trigger. It's the best way to summarize it. It enhances the response by the immune system. Because a subunit protein as a standalone would only elicit a very weak response by the immune system. Its immunogenicity is very low. It needs a booster, to use another way of describing it. So Tuesday and Thursday, we're going to be talking about Novavax and their adjuvant, and there's some very disturbing findings that we're not going to go into tonight. I want to take this kind of step by step because there's a lot to absorb, a lot to digest here. But back in August of 2021, 1st of August, we published several papers on snake venom. I'd like to start with this one. Snake venom toxins targeted the nervous system. This was published on February of 2015. We went through in this to show the actions of proteins and peptides and enzymes with respect to how they affect the human body. Okay, so the basic overview is what we provided. Tonight we're going to be focused on enzymes. But we broke this down in this paper showing proteins, peptides, and enzymes. Let me just scan through this. Polypeptides. Effects of snake venom polypeptides on the central nervous system. That was published in December of 2012. And the reason that we went through this paper and shared it with you was to do a side-by-side comparison. On the one hand, the effects on the nervous system by snake venom. Then we took that list of side effects, if you will, or direct effects of the snake venom. And we took the side effects of the vaccines, Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson. We took the predominant in 2021 vaccines, and we looked at their side effects, we compared the two lists, we overlaid them, and they were identical. So we reverse engineer the ingredients that are obfuscated by the drug companies to determine the actual ingredients beyond what they're declaring, and we looked at the effects upon the nervous system as well as the major organs of the body. And we reverse engineered from the side effects to the vaccines and found them to be identical to the direct effects of snake venom. Okay? We also presented a paper regarding the loss of taste and smell due to snake bite. That was published in 2016. That's a side effect of both the virus and the vaccine related to COVID. Okay. Now, related to tonight, focused on the enzymes of snake venom, are phospholipases, A2, phospholipases, A2. So just bear that in mind. That's something we also published. We published the paper from, let's see, this was from, let's see if we have the date on here. 2021, January of 2021. Phospholipases, A2, otherwise known as PLA2, so that's how we will abbreviate it tonight. SPLA2 dash, then Roman numeral 2. Okay, we're going to talk about that tonight. Again, all of this we presented back in 2021. I have one more paper that I really want to highlight here, if I can get to it, from the magazine regarding PLA2s. We showed in the magazine the microneedle array patches and the snake venom origin, or I should say pit viper origin for those microneedle array patches. Again, the spiritual connotation here to the microneedle array patch and the snake, the serpent. Yes, dear?
If you could, just very briefly, make a big differentiation, please, between what we've presented in multiple magazines well before these things were published, so as to not be grouped in or think that we are going to align ourselves in any way with the exaggerated information that Stu Peters / Alex Jones wannabe and his chiropractor guest, Dr. Argiers or whatever his name is, when they were talking about sensationalizing snake venom in the water. We have nothing right. to do with that. Right. So okay. I just want that to be made clear.
Okay. So you probably couldn't hear what Kathleen was saying. She was reminding me that Stu Peters had a chiropractor on some months ago, and he was talking about or making the claim that snake venom was being found in the public water supplies here in the United States, and that somehow that was related to the vaccines. We do not have any connection with Stu Peters or his guest. We do not endorse Stu Peters in general. And we certainly do not endorse the claim that snake venom is being found in the public water supply. I've never seen any scientific evidence to back up that claim. So I would not concern yourselves with that. Again, it shows the lack of integrity on the part of Stu Peters and the information that he's presenting and the vetting of his guests that he interviews. Okay. I apologize. I'm really struggling to find this one particular article. Let me go to my table of contents. Okay, so we had snake venom toxins targeted at the nervous system. Another paper, effects of snake venom polypeptides on the nervous system. Snakes could be the original source of the new coronavirus outbreak in China. That was another paper that we presented. Okay. We we were showing the omics, which is the multidisciplinary research data applied to various segments of biology. We were showing the modern trends in animal venom research, the omics and the nanomaterials in there. So the PLA2s, that's what we're talking about tonight. We presented that on page 117 in the August 2021 edition of the magazine. Let me just read a little bit from there about PLA2s. Very simple. The superfamily of phospholipases A2, PLA2s, consists of a large number of members that catalyze the hydrolysis of phospholipids at a specific position. Here we show that secreted PLA2s from the venom of various snakes protect to varying degrees the VARO-E6 cells widely used for the replication of viruses, with evident cytopathic action from SARS-CoV-2 infection. So we go through and detail PLA2s there. And I just wanted to establish for you that we did publish this before this article that I want to share with you from Arizona State. This is authored by Rosemary Brandt, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at arizona.edu. August 24, 2021. An enzyme with an elusive role in severe inflammation may be a key mechanism driving COVID-19 severity and could provide a new therapeutic target to reduce COVID-19 mortality, according to the study. Researchers at the University of Arizona, in collaboration with Stony Brook University and Wake Forest School of Medicine, analyzed blood samples from two COVID-19 patient cohorts and found that circulation of the enzyme secreted phospholipase A2 group 2A, or SPLA2-2A, may be the most important factor in predicting which patients with severe COVID-19 eventually succumb to the virus. The SPLA2-2A enzyme, which has similarities to an active enzyme in rattlesnake venom, is found in low concentrations in healthy individuals and has long been known to play a critical role in defense against bacterial infections, destroying microbial cell membranes. When the activated enzyme circulates at high levels, it has the capacity to shred the membranes of vital organs. So, I will elaborate on that. I'm going to go to the actual peer-reviewed published paper. That's just a highlight, an excerpt from the summary article. From the actual paper, again, they're saying that naturally occurring in the human body as part of our defense system against bacteria and viruses, PLA2s at very low levels, at therapeutic levels, natural levels in the human body, they attack, these enzymes attack the outer cell membrane, the plasma membrane of either a bacteria or a virus, and they shred that membrane, which causes the cell to rupture, and that causes death to the bacteria or the virus. Again, low levels of PLA2s. Now, in snake venom, they are finding high levels of SPLA2-2As in snake venom, and they look at the effects on the human body. Just like I said, we did in the August edition in 2021, we looked at the side effects, the neurological side effects, and the side effects to the major organs of the virus and the vaccines. of SARS-CoV-2 COVID-19. And we overlaid those with the effects of the PLA2s from snake venom, and they were virtually identical. That brought us to the conclusion back in August of last year that they're in the single strand of RNA, in the sequence, there were genomic fragments that were leading to the production by the virus of PLA2s at low levels. But these PLA2s, because they were only fragments, they didn't have the action of shredding the virus itself. Because in the vaccine, they are finding high levels of PLA2s. And they are attacking the major organs of the body. They're shredding healthy cells. They're destroying the plasma membrane of the cells of liver, kidney, heart, and neurons. And I'll read from the published paper to back that up. So think of these enzymes as shredders. They're finding extremely high levels of these PLA2s as a result of a person being infected. They're not talking about the vaccines at all in this peer-reviewed paper. No mention. That's why I prefaced at the beginning. If you are going to define something, a therapeutic, as a vaccine, it must have the identical components as the virus. The virus has PLA2s in it because the actions upon the body, the destruction of the major organs leading to death, are identical to the actions of the PLA2s found in snake venom. The enzymes are the same. Snake venom enzyme, virus enzyme. Same effect upon the human body. Now, we are stepping into conjecture regarding the vaccine, because the vaccines, we have shown, the data is there, we've shown you the papers, the vaccines are producing the same side effects leading to deaths. Same reverse engineering, same comparative analysis we're doing right now tonight. We are saying, as conjecture, I don't have the papers yet, but as conjecture, we are saying that the PLA2s, the enzymes found in the vaccines, and this was published back in August of 2021. We did that comparative analysis. We're saying now, interestingly, in August of 2022, a year later, the same thing. Let me put it a different way. Because these researchers from the University of Arizona, I think I said Arizona State, I misspoke, University of Arizona, saying that these effects upon the human body by the virus are directly attributable to the PLA2 enzymes found in snake venom. Those same effects that they're saying the enzyme in the virus is having, we have already shown you in August of last year, those same effects, major organ failure leading to death by way of the vaccine, and the neurological damage that is done by way of the vaccine that is identical to snake venom. I think if pressed privately, if there's some way to have a private conversation with these researchers, I think they would say, yeah, the vaccines are doing the same thing that the virus is doing. That the vaccine does have the PLA2s in it from snake venom, because we're seeing the same action. You'll hear in this video that I'm going to present, it's about 10 minutes long. One of the principal researchers who's being interviewed indicates that there are late stage trials. And remember, this is back in August of 2021, this interview I'm going to play for you. At that time, there were late stage trials for what are known as PLA inhibitors. They were doing research on PLAs, these enzymes, subsequent to trying to find a therapeutic for specific diseases. They were not trying to create an anti-venom. They were looking at an enzyme that leads to certain organ failure diseases. And so they were in late stage human trials with those inhibitors to those enzymes. And when COVID hit, as he states, they repurposed those trial inhibitors because they were finding PLA actions, shredding actions by the enzymes that they were already studying and trialing for specific diseases. They were finding this with respect to COVID patients who had died. The post-mortem, the autopsy, was performed, and they were looking at and they were testing for a number of things, but they happened to test for PLA, and then they tested more on for PLA, the presence of these enzymes, and they found high, extremely high levels of these enzymes as a result of the autopsy for victims of COVID-19. And so it caused them to say, well, we have some ready-made inhibitors that can be effective against these enzymes. Let's redirect them, repurpose them to treat people infected with COVID or diagnosed with COVID, the disease, infected with the virus SARS-CoV-2. Kathleen and I have done some additional research to try to find what happened to these trials. What happened to this repurposing of these enzyme inhibitors? And we're still trying to find papers where this repurposing of enzyme inhibitors, what was the outcome of the repurposing? So far, we've not found any. Doesn't mean they don't exist. We just need to keep digging. But we do find it very suspicious that now, a year later, we're not finding many, many, many papers touting the positive, benevolent, therapeutic abilities for these inhibitors that were well along in development, the application of these inhibitors to these specific PLA enzymes to treat victims diagnosed with COVID-19. Maybe you guys can help us find some of these inhibitors to PLA2s as treatment, as therapeutics for COVID-19. That's how we've been searching it. Okay. It appears, and again, this is conjecture, but it appears that it's been suppressed. those papers, if they exist, that application of those suppressors perhaps has been suppressed. I don't know. But it's certainly suspicious. And we will keep digging. Now, I have the paper in front of me. This was published in Clinical Investigations. In August, let me get it exactly here. Clinical Investigations in 2021. Give me the date here, guys. Yep, August. It was accepted August 12th of 2021 and published on October 1st of 2021 in the Journal of Clinical Investigation. Now, the gentleman in this video that we're going to play after I dive into some excerpts right here is Floyd H. Chilton, PhD, and he is from the University of Arizona. Okay? He's one of the authors in the paper that I'm citing excerpts from. Let me get to a punchline. Furthermore, patients with severe COVID-19 and those with fatal COVID-19 experience more complications such as cardiac arrest, acute kidney injury and renal failure, bacterial pneumonia, ARDS, and sepsis. Elevated SPLA group 2A levels have been associated with various clinical conditions, including sepsis and systematic bacterial infections, adult respiratory disease syndrome, ARDS, atherosclerosis, cancer, and multiple organ trauma. Basal levels of circulating SPLA-2A in healthy humans are 1 to 3 nanograms per milliliter. However, SPLA-2A plasma concentrations can reach 250 to 500 nanograms per milliliter during acute sepsis. Marked elevations in circulating SPLA-2A levels mirrored disease severity, particularly in diseased COVID-19 patients. Circulating SPLA-2A was catalytically active and paralleled several indices of disease severity, including hyperglycemia, kidney dysfunction, hypoxia, anemia, and multiple organ dysfunction. Importantly, 3 independent machine learning approaches, that's AI, 3 different AI, identified SPLA-2A as the central feature in predicting survivors versus non-survivors in cases of severe COVID-19. Now they're adding to this with another test where they're testing for urea nitrogen. Since blood urea nitrogen, abbreviated as BUN, B-U-N, was identified alongside plasma SPLA-2A as a key stratification feature, we elevated a novel PLA-BUN index as a prognostic biomarker of COVID-19 related mortality. So this became a tracer, a biomarker, looking at the levels of these two components, urea, which is a waste product, obviously urine, urea in the blood, and these enzymes, PLAs, in the blood. And they use those together as a single indicator, a single tracer or marker in the blood that they were testing of these victims. Okay? The PLA Bun Index accurately stratifying patients with severe disease and deceased patients. Collectively, our study provides evidence to support a targeted therapeutic approach using clinically available SPLA-2 inhibitors to reduce COVID-19 mortality. Now, this is what I was talking about a moment ago. Okay? Available SPLA-2A inhibitors to reduce COVID-19 mortality. So far to date, we haven't found any evidence that they're doing that they're applying these therapeutics to these patients. Maybe they are, but I haven't heard about it. These inhibitors to this enzyme. Given the critical role of SPLA-2A in several related diseases, these data suggest that PLA hydrolyzes that may contribute to COVID-19 disease severity and mortality. So they're citing a direct link between the enzymes, the increased level of urea in the blood, to COVID severity. Okay. Early studies suggested that the host response to COVID-19 may be associated with an excessive pro-inflammatory response caused by a cytokine storm syndrome, CSS. However, more recent studies show that persistent CSS is uncommon in severe COVID-19 disease, where high-dose steroids benefit only a small proportion of individuals with organ failure. Mounting evidence supports the idea that immunometabolic suppression and not CSS compromises host immunity, leading to unrestrained viral replication and severe COVID-19. Even when viral burdens decrease, pathologies, including tissue and organ damage, often remain. So even if suppressive actions are taken, the damage is done, and people succumb to major organ failure. Okay? And this is due to the PLAs. Again, just to reemphasize, three parallel unbiased machine learning analyzes also, isn't written properly. Machine learning analysis also identified elevated SPLA-2s as a critical risk factor to COVID-19 mortality. So just to reiterate that, they confirmed, they cross-checked their findings. We found that deceased COVID-19 patients had persistently elevated SPLA-2A levels. When activated, SPLA-2 has direct and organism-wide pathogenic potential, which may contribute to COVID-19 severity and mortality. Again, I'm not giving you all the real super detailed breakdown here from the paper. You can take a look at that if you want. We'll have this in the September issue of Entangled Magazine. Given the known properties of SPLA-2, our findings suggest that it may prolong and exacerbate tissue and organ damage during fatal COVID-19 disease. So here they're stating, they're referencing several, at the end of the paper, several references to the inhibitors, okay, the research. It says here, given the role of SPLA-2A during other forms of critical illness, that are often complicated by multiple organ failure and high mortality rates, structurally diverse classes of SPLA-2 inhibitors have been developed. Okay? Although deemed safe for clinical use, clinical trials using an inhibitor only improve survival in patients with sepsis when treatment was initiated within 18 hours of organ failure. Okay? So we're going to look for more research papers on the outcome, the fate of these inhibitors being repurposed for COVID-19. I think you can all appreciate that the drug companies that are putting together their own versions of vaccines would not want these PLA inhibitors that already exist to be utilized, to be applied in a benevolent fashion. And again, I'm going to step into conjecture, but when we reverse engineer from the major organ failure, from the deaths and all of that, when we reverse engineer from those effects, and we see that the effects have a direct correlation to this enzyme, our conjecture as to the correlation is that the vaccines do include the snake venom, SPLA-2A, which we cited a year ago exactly, August 1st of last year. Again, that the vaccines, we believe, we don't have the proof yet, but we're very close to it because these researchers are saying the enzyme causes major organ failure and death. Here's how it manifests. I didn't go on into all the details, but here's how it manifests. We're seeing the same manifestation in the vaccinated. Again. So University of Arizona is backing up what we said, and they said this on the 21st and October of 2021, exactly what we said August 1st of 2021. We just found this paper. We just found the article and the peer-reviewed paper, the published paper in Clinical Investigations. So we thought we would bring it to your attention again as further evidence. Now, from August of 2021 is this video. It's about 10 minutes long. I need to change my audio settings and then I'll go ahead and I'll play the video for you. Give me a moment.
At asu.edu. Researchers have discovered what could be a contributing factor in COVID fatalities. The study involves an enzyme that's similar to rattlesnake venom. We learn more from U of A's Floyd Chilton, the study's senior researcher. Floyd Chilton, welcome to Arizona Horizon. Thank you for joining us and talking, but this is fascinating stuff here. Now, a key molecular mechanism is found to what, indicate COVID mortality? Talk to us about this.
Yeah, we really are excited, and it also frightens us a bit. This mechanism that we've uncovered, the enzyme has some really, really nasty biology, and it has some nasty biology to really lead to mortality and for those people who succumb to the disease. So this was unexpected. We found some of the highest levels of this enzyme that have ever been found. So again, understanding the biology of this enzyme, understanding what it has the capacity to do, really pointed us in the direction of, wow, this could be playing a major role in the mortality that we see in severe patients.
And so again, if a patient has high levels of this particular enzyme, the outcome, the risk for mortality, the risk for death is much higher, true? And again, what goes on here? Is it inflammation? What's this enzyme doing?
Well, certainly it's part of inflammation, and it's part of the latter inflammatory storm. There's an initial one and a latter one. But this enzyme is, on one hand, it was designed to be protective. Why do we have it? Well, it breaks down, it shreds the membranes of bacteria and viruses at normal concentration. So it's there to protect us. It's there for disease or viral resistance. However, once it gets to extraordinarily high concentrations where we're seeing here, then at the same time, a second hit takes place and our vital organs begin to lose their fat symmetry, and they begin to put molecules on the outside of the membrane that is recognized by this enzyme. And this begins to shred the vital organs, leading to multiple organ failure, and we postulate a primary death mechanism. But again, it's the combination of this enzyme that was designed to protect us that then reaches extraordinarily high levels. At the same time, this enzyme normally doesn't attack human tissues or cells, but once organs begin to fail, they begin to lose their ability to hide these fats. And then all of a sudden, this enzyme believes that the organs are a bacteria and they begin to shred them.
Sounds like another immune system storm involved with COVID here. We heard about this when COVID first broke out with the cytokine storm. Now, and again, this is a neurotoxin similar to neurotoxins, this enzyme similar to what you find in rattlesnake venom?
Yeah, it's the active ingredient of most neurotoxins in rattlesnake and other venoms. Now, it's not exactly the same enzyme. It's a humanized form of the enzyme. But the homology, the sequence homology, the similarities are striking. They're both the same size within their active sites. They do the same thing. And they belong in exactly the same family. We humans have utilized this. This enzyme is 100 million years old, 100 million years through evolution. And we obviously utilize it to fight bacterial and viral infections. It's very, very similar. It's a humanized form, but it does many of the same things, and it has much of the biology of rattlesnake venom phospholipase A2.
And again, too much of the enzyme is not a good thing, even though it is supposed to be good for us. Where do we go from here as far as using results and measurements of this enzyme in treating COVID patients? And another question here, could this involve long-haul COVID patients?
Well, you've asked two questions there, and I'm going to answer the first one, but remember the long-haul question, because I do want to come back to that. The good news, and it really, really is good news, when we find a potential mechanism of death such as this one, and at the same time, there are clinical inhibitors that have been developed through late clinical trials that could be repurposed for COVID, then that's almost the hat trick. The final part of the hat trick is the clinical trial. But we're not talking years to develop these inhibitors. In fact, they're currently in clinical trials for snake bites, these same inhibitors. So these inhibitors have been taken through late phase two clinical trials. They can be repurposed. And I'm speaking with many of the largest organizations in the world about an international multi-center clinical trial. That's the next critical step. Is this causing death? Is this the causative aspect of the death? And we can directly test that with these already late stage clinical trial inhibitors.
Okay, very good. And we've only got about 30 seconds, so very quickly, could this be a factor in long haul?
It could be a factor in long haul. I mean, people with long haul, they you know, they are marathon runners, they're active, and then they can't walk to the mailbox. Well, just like rattlesnake phospholipase A2, this acts at neuromuscular junctions. So many of the signs of weakness and fatigue that we see, certainly the biology of this enzyme could fit within this and could be, we haven't tested that. Yeah. That's a hypothesis. That's the next place we're going.
Very good. Floyd Chilton, interesting stuff. U of A Bio5 Institute. Great work. Congratulations on your research, and thank you so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you for having me.
Okay, I think we're back. So just to reiterate a little bit from that interview, at the end, they were discussing long haulers disease or long hauler syndrome. So let me just reiterate what that is. Essentially, these are long-term effects of COVID, the signs and symptoms of COVID lingering for long periods of time. And this is, as the doctor was mentioning, you know, marathon runners who could barely just walk to the mailbox. This is this is indicative of the neurological impact of snake venom, of these PLA2 enzymes upon the nervous system. And again, this was one of the papers that we included in the August of 2021 edition, was specific to that neurological damage by these PLA2 enzymes. And so in the circumstance of long hauler syndrome, this means that if a person survives, they don't succumb to major organ failure, there's still a long-term neurological breakdown. So if you picture the synapses in the brain, for example, at the synaptic gap forming the synapse, you have chemicals that are known as neurotransmitters like dopamine and endorphins and epinephrine, and these enhance the conduction of electrical signals across that gap. And of course, this spreads to all of the neurons and the dendrites of the brain. In fact, most of the brain activity, most of the processing of data that occurs by the brain actually occurs in the dendrites. Some 60% of the brain activity is concentrated in the dendrites. Most of the time we talk about neurons and everybody thinks that everything that happens in the brain happens in the neurons. It's actually been proven in recent studies that most of the data processing is taking place in the dendrites, and this research is an outcome of developing the brain-computer interfaces. So isn't that interesting? They're finding more out about the brain in order to create this connection of the brain to the computer. So it's not just neurons, it's also the dendrites. In fact, predominantly the connecting, the interfacing of the dendrites with computers. So that's just an aside. But long hauler syndrome, as we are seeing survivors of COVID that are weak, that have poor motor skills, poor cognitive skills, that are lasting now for over a year. Some never recover from it. So if they don't die from major organ failure, they have long-term neurological deficits that they have to contend with for however long they happen to survive, they happen to live. And again, the doctor was indicating that this is a result of these neurotoxic enzymes that are found in snake venom. They're finding this in COVID. If they're finding it in the disease, which is the diagnosis, if they're finding it in the virus, SARS-CoV-2, then they are, I mean, it's a biological absolute in my mind that if you are taking the genetic sequence of the virus in order to make a vaccine, then you are not screening out, genetically speaking, sequence speaking, you're not screening out the SPLA-2As. Speaking of sequence, the doctor mentioned that the sequence of the snake venom is homologous to the sequence of SARS-CoV-2. In other words, the short sequence that contains the enzymes in the virus is the same sequence of enzymes found in snake venom. Homologous means, and I'll read the definition, it means same, similar, analogous to, found to be the same. So let me read this. This is from Scientific Definitions in Biology of chromosomes pairing at meiosis and having the same structural features and pattern of genes. Again, in biology, of organs similar in position, structure, and evolutionary origin, but not necessarily in function. Okay, so they are saying that the homology is very similar. He didn't say identical. He said very similar homology of the sequence of the virus to the homology of snake venom. So at the genetic level, they're matching up. And he went on to say that the effects of the enzyme are identical as those found in people that are bitten by a venomous snake, envenomated victim, same outcome as a person who contracts the disease, COVID-19, from the virus SARS-CoV-2. They're the same. And I'll say it again. What is found in the virus is what is found in the vaccine. Otherwise, it is not a vaccine. Okay? Again, he was saying there were high concentrations of SPLA-2A in the organs naturally occurring enzyme in the body, as I said at the beginning, but extremely, these are their words, extremely high concentrations of the enzymes in people diagnosed with COVID-19. They cite that this is not naturally occurring. A person who has been diagnosed with COVID-19 is exhibiting the same signs and symptoms as someone who was bitten by a pit viper. How does that happen? It's the cunning of Satan. You have a mechanism that is delivering the mark of the beast, that is functioning as the serpent. What is Satan referred to? That old serpent, that old viper. This is not a coincidence. This is not serendipitous. This is by design by Satan himself. I'm not saying this doctor or other researchers from the University of Arizona or others, I'm not saying they're possessed by Satan. I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying that this discovery shows what's going on with the man-made virus, according to the late Dr. Luc Montagnier and others, who have said this is a man-made virus. They've published their peer-reviewed papers. We've published them in our magazine. So whoever designed the messenger RNA genomic sequence that included fragments of HIV-1, and we are seeing now a homologous sequence of enzymes in SARS-CoV-2's sequence, that the essence of the pit viper is included, the cunning of Satan is included in the design of the virus made by man, inspired spiritually by Satan. There's no other way to explain it. Again, this is in the category of forbidden knowledge that Satan has passed on to man. There's no good reason to design such a virus. Concurrently, there's no good reason to release such a virus on humanity. It is the cunning of Satan to do that. Cunning in the fashion that you release the problem that you created, the virus, you elicit a reaction from humanity, and then you present your solution to the problem, which are the so-called vaccines, which contain, in our estimation, SPLA-2A snake venom enzymes in high concentrations in the vaccines. That's our conjecture. We'll find the evidence on the vaccine side. We have the evidence on the virus side. Let's take it a step further. We know that the microneedle array patch, as we presented in August of 2021, in that same edition, we were repeating the information that we had provided way back in mid-2020, March of 2020, talking about, hey, the microneedle array patch is the way they're going to deliver the final solution. So then we repeated that in August. We've repeated it in many live streams. Now we're bringing it up again because the microneedle array patch, as you know, from University of Queensland and their Hexapro Proline adjuvant mixed with their version of a subunit protein, is going to be delivered by Vaxol, I believe was the name of the manufacturer in Australia of their microneedle array patch. They're going to deliver their vaccine. So they're going to call it a subunit protein. They're going to call it the final solution because it doesn't have to be refrigerated. It can be self-applied by the microneedle array patch. They're going to call it their final solution to problem reaction solution and the logistics, the refrigeration, all of that stuff of the other vaccines. But on top of all of that, which we have said before, here's the new piece to this. They will deliver someone's, whether it's University of Queensland or somebody else, they will deliver by microneedle array patch a subunit protein. And they'll tout all of the benefits, all of the reasons to use that and do away with the messenger RNA-based and the DNA-based. They'll say subunit protein is the answer. Because there have been enough people like Kathleen and myself and many of you who've been pushing back against the messenger RNA specifically. So they say, well, hey, we have an answer to that subunit protein. The problem with a subunit protein is that it does not elicit from a molecular, biological, immunological discussion, does not elicit a strong enough immune system response. It doesn't have a high enough immunogenicity. It needs an adjuvant. So the focus, where we've been taking you the last several live streams, where we're taking you here in the September issue of Entangle, is to the focus on adjuvants. Tuesday and Thursday, we will elaborate more on what we're talking specifically about with regard to adjuvants. We're not talking aluminum, which is the most commonly used adjuvant for traditional vaccines of the past and even today. I think you can put the pieces together already where we're going with our discussion on adjuvants. But I'm going to hold off until Tuesday, citing exactly what adjuvant it is, what it's comprised of, and what its actions are, and what the dangers are. Just know at this point, and we're going to end early tonight, just know they will present their final solution post-reset under the Antichrist in order to get that last segment of humanity that's been holding out against getting vaccinated. Scripture says that perhaps even the elect could be deceived. I think that's the mechanism by which they could be deceived. They'll think, oh, well, a subunit protein doesn't change the DNA. Oh, really? Not so fast, Pilgrim. Look at the adjuvant. Look at Hexapro 6 proline adjuvant already. And we're going beyond Hexapro. The 6-proline adjuvant. We're going beyond that to something more insidious. It's not the protein, Joe Bag of Donuts. It's not the protein that's the problem. The protein is not the problem, the adjuvant is. The adjuvant will get little to no press. Here's our expectation. The mainstream narrative, the alternative media community will jump up and down. Mainstream narrative will say, hey, the solution is subunit protein. The alternative media will jump up and down and say, oh, there's danger with the subunit protein, danger with the subunit protein. And they'll come up with some reason that the subunit protein is dangerous. They all will miss what we're telling you tonight. It's all about the adjuvant. The danger is in the adjuvant, and we'll show you what the danger is. This is another example of what you hire Kathleen and I to do. To go deeper than even the alternative media outlets. In order to determine really what is the depth of the cunning of Satan. How deceptive he is. How he's able to obfuscate what he's really doing, what he's really using. the question about why would you design a virus? Why would you release the virus purposefully? It's an excuse in problem reaction solution. The virus is the excuse for the vaccine. Doesn't matter what vaccine it is. So what's the reason for the vaccine? It's the excuse to introduce something into your body, either through a hypodermic needle and syringe or through a microneedle array patch. It's an excuse, virus and vaccine. It's an excuse to deliver something into your body. Something that will permanently and with the first injection alter a person's DNA, changing their name so that it is no longer found in the book of life by God himself. That's the cunning of Satan. To create the problem, get people to demand the solution and deliver the solution, but even the vaccines to date are not the final solution. The final solution comes post-reset. And it will be disguised as an answer to the concerns regarding messenger RNA and DNA. There will be an acknowledgement of sorts to the outcry in the alternative media about the changing of the DNA. There have been many people who have said it, yeah, messenger RNA, DNA-based vaccines change the DNA, but they don't go far enough and cite the implications of the changing of the DNA, which is the mark of the beast implication. The changing of the DNA is the mark of the beast itself. Yes, there are other technological components that indicate, that mark a person as having undergone that alteration of their DNA. The technologies we've talked about only mark a person as altered in their DNA, as homo novus. That's all they do. They mark a person, and once they're marked, they're interfaced with the beast system computers. Okay? Now, with respect to University of Queensland's subunit protein vaccine, we talked about their adjuvant, the hexaproline adjuvant. But we also showed you definitively what had been our conjecture for a couple of weeks. We showed you the smoking gun evidence of the inclusion of messenger RNA along with the subunit protein. Thus, even the subunit protein with the inclusion of messenger RNA, proven with scientific peer-reviewed papers, changes the DNA. We will share with you on Tuesday and Thursday the toxic effects of the adjuvant that is slated to be delivered by the coming subunit protein post-reset. It may or may not be the University of Queensland's subunit protein. It may be a different one. But it will include RNA. And it will change the DNA. And it will kill millions of people due to the actions of the adjuvant. The adjuvant of the serpent. There's more to the serpent than what I have shared tonight. We are revealing the cunning of Satan himself. God bless you all, and good night.